Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, more reaction to Pope Benedict's words to world diplomats to the Holy See. We hear from the ambassadors of Ireland and the United States. A Justice and Peace representative for Pakistan's bishops tells of reaction there to the Pope's words of concern regarding the country's blasphemy laws, and a special report from the Holy Land, where our correspondent is following the annual pilgrimage of European and North American bishops in support of local Christians. Pope Benedict XVI's annual State of the World Address to the some 178 ambassadors accredited to the Holy See Monday has been making headlines in the media around the world. We here at Vatican Radio have been speaking to some of those diplomats about their impressions of the Pope's speech. Well, in Monday's discourse, Pope Benedict called for the respect of the human right of religious freedom, and denounced the targeted killing of Christians in Iraq, Egypt, and Nigeria. He mourned the recent assassination of a Pakistani governor committed to repealing a blasphemy law, which the Pope said is used as a pretext for injustice and violence against minorities. Pope Benedict also reiterated his concern for the moment of difficulty and trial that the faithful of China are currently experiencing. Well, the Irish ambassador to the Holy See, Noel Fahey, told Vatican Radio he found the Pope's speech very focused and very clear.
I think it was a very interesting speech. It was certainly listened to with great care by the Corps. I think this year it was a remarkably focused speech. It focused very much on religious freedom and on issues of very direct concern to the Church. It had less of the broader kind of comment that the Holy Father sometimes makes in these addresses. It was very focused. It's not surprising in view of events in the Middle East in the last year, and also in view of the Holy Father's World Peace Day message on the 1st of January, that he focused on religious freedom, and especially religious freedom in the Middle East. He was very direct there. He made it clear that Catholics and Christians are entitled to exactly the same human rights in Muslim countries as the Muslim population. He certainly didn't pull any punches, I think, in his statements there. He was very, very direct. He then went on to talk about religious freedom in the West, and he returned to issues that have been keynotes of his pontificate right since the outset. His fears about the marginalisation of religion in Europe and North America, and his worries that religion and Catholicism in particular is being denied a right to speak out and speak up and have its concerns taken into account. It was interesting, I thought, that he included both the issue of religious freedom, where Catholics are directly persecuted, in the same address as the treatment of religion in Europe and North America. One slightly surprising aspect was the fact that there was very little in the speech on the hugely positive work that the church does throughout the world. And this is especially noticeable in the case of Haiti. Haiti was not referred to. I know the Holy Father has referred to it elsewhere, for instance in the Angelus last Sunday. But I, when you remember that the international aid effort in Haiti is so dependent on the institutions of the Catholic Church, both the local church and the Catholic relief agencies, it's interesting that this aspect, hugely positive aspect of the church's work, was not really covered, except for a reference, and a very interesting reference, to Mother Teresa. But then the Holy Father spoke at length, and I'm sure he didn't want to keep the diplomats too long, so he had to select what he covers in a State of the World address, and you have to be careful and selective when you're covering such a broad area.
Ireland's ambassador to the Holy See, Noel Fahey. Well, for the United States Ambassador Miguel Diaz, the papal speech on January 10th also coincided with a special occasion, the 27th anniversary of the establishment of formal diplomatic relations between his country and the Holy See. He spoke to Vatican Radio's Emer McCarthy.
As we celebrate the anniversary of formal diplomatic relations between the United States and the Holy See, this is a great opportunity to underscore the fact that the United States has been a steady defender of human rights throughout the world, and especially the right to religious freedom. President Obama has strongly condemned the attacks against Christians in Iraq, Nigeria, and Egypt, and has offered any necessary assistance to bring the perpetrators to justice. So my reaction is one of we are in one heart when it comes to, you know, this issue of defending basic human rights, and especially the fundamental right to religious freedom.
Now, of course, the situation in the Middle East is a situation that the United States has holds particularly close to heart, considered its involvement in the peace process there. Is there a general feeling that religion as a path to peace really has to be looked at a closer level in the Middle East between the predominant religions there?
Again, you know, the present administration has been very concerned with the various violence that has occurred in the past couple of months against religious minorities, and in particular against Christians, and we have strongly condemned and spoken against this violence. We will continue to invite the governments to protect religious minorities, to protect Christians and others, so that we can foster an environment of peace, an environment of understanding, an environment of friendship in these troubled areas of the world.
Now, the United States, in its very constitution, highlights the importance of religious tolerance between citizens. Pluralism is one of the most important aspects of the United States, and indeed it was one of the most important constitutions of the Founding Fathers. The Holy Father, however, also points to the West, where he says there seems to be a growing intolerance towards religion. And he indeed speaks of a false pluralism in society regarding religion. What do you think he means by this?
Again, one of the things that he spoke about were, you know, he clearly spoke to a number of instances in which religious symbols are not allowed to, you know, to be used. One of the great treasures of the American society has been this cherished value of religious freedom. As you have stated, you know, this is enshrined in our at the heart of what it means to be an American. We could not write history without thinking of the tremendous contribution that religious figures have made to our country. And while we certainly uphold the separation of church and state, we do not have this kind of radical secularism that dismisses the positive contributions of religious figures and religious ideas from our society. And in fact, you know, we probably come very close to what the Holy Father has characterized as a positive, you know, form of a secular society in which values, in which religious traditions, in which religious ideas and persons are taken into serious consideration, in which these persons can for the benefit of the common good, offer their contributions. reasons.
Ambassador Diaz, you speak, of course, that we are marking the anniversary of the founding of relations between the United States and the Holy See. Can you speak to us a little bit about the events that are planned to mark this anniversary and about its importance in the life of the United States?
Well, I think that in terms of we don't have any major event to plan this anniversary, but we certainly are commemorating this event as in the ongoing relationship that this mission has had with the Holy See. We 27 years ago we formalized this relationship, but as you know and as many people know, this relationship really goes back to many years. In fact, to our very foundation, when the Pope asked to send to appoint bishops, and we clearly President Washington then stated very clearly that it was the intent of this nation to precisely allow the freedom of religion, to allow for for the diversity of religious perspectives and traditions to be part of this new experiment and wonderful experiment in democracy. And so I think that today it's a time when we when we think about all the accomplishments that have been done, all the things that have been accomplished when it comes to this relationship. We think of the bringing down of the Berlin Wall and the cooperation that occurred between John Paul II and President Reagan. And we look now to the present when we are going from tearing down walls to building bridges across human differences, religious traditions, ethnic, different cultural and racial differences. And so I think that this is a time to to bring our efforts and once again work with the Holy See and with men and women of goodwill throughout the world, so that we can overcome differences between North and South, East and West, religious differences, economic differences, and all other kinds of walls that continue to separate us.
U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, Miguel Diaz. Well, in his speech to the diplomatic corps on Monday, Pope Benedict XVI encouraged the leaders of Pakistan to take the necessary steps to abolish the blasphemy law in their country, saying that it serves as a pretext for acts of injustice and violence against religious minorities. Last week, Punjab's provincial governor, Salam Tazir, a Muslim, was assassinated by one of his security guards because of his opposition to the law. The governor had also requested a pardon for Asia Bibi, the Christian mother of five, sentenced to death under the law. While reacting to the Holy Father's words, Peter Jacob, the executive secretary of the National Commission for Justice and Peace of the Pakistani Bishops' Conference, said debate over the blasphemy law should be seen as a civil society cause and not a Christian-Muslim conflict. Many members of Pakistan's parliament and Muslim press have made it clear that this issue is not a religious conflict, he says. Jacob spoke to Vatican Radio's Robin Gomez about how people in Pakistan have been reacting to the Pope's comments.
Yes, some response, some reaction has appeared in the newspapers today. Some channels also reported. But this is a normal thing, like the journalists solicit opinion after anything that like that happens. So they will call up important political figures or religious figures, and they will solicit their opinion. So it's immediate and very kind of orchestrated or solicited opinion rather than independent opinions. Though I expect that there'll be more reaction coming to it. It is because the quarters supporting blasphemy laws will try to make a propaganda out of it, which has happened several times, and that's expected. But so far, it's only the kind of view which is still negative, which is not trying to see the meaning behind. And also it is in Pakistani press, it looks like it is a singular issue which Pope has spoken about, which is not true. He has spoken at length on religious freedom, and not only in Pakistan, it's about almost the entire world.
Yes, that's true. He has spoken about Southeast Asia, South Asia, as well as in the Middle East, Africa, and even in Europe he has spoken. Right. Yes. But then earlier on in November, he had made an appeal, personal appeal, for Asia Bibi, who is who has been sentenced to death because of this blasphemy law, offense to the Prophet Muhammad. He appealed for her life also. I mean, that appeal as well as this appeal, has there been any sort of a negative reaction to that from extremists?
Well, the earlier appeal about Asia's release, yes, it generated a very negative response reaction. And this one, it is still very early to say in which direction the response will be. But if I believe if people try to read the speech that Holy Father has made, of course they will not have much objection. But the fear is that the organizations working to strengthen and keep blasphemy laws will make a propaganda out of it.
Do you think that the Pope's appeal was timely, opportune, or ill-timed? Because just after the assassination of Punjab Governor Salman Taseer...
If you ask, there has to be a reaction any time the speech is made. And as far as civil society here is concerned, we are trying to make it an issue concerning human rights and not religious freedom. Now, Pope being head of a religious community, faithful, he has his own responsibility to dispense with, whereas the civil society will have different concerns in Pakistan. But I think that there is a meeting point, and that meeting point is that we all want injustice to end. Sometimes it is good to make a contribution, irrespective of what response and reaction it will generate.
Now, how would you describe the current situation in the country following the assassination of Taseer, the governor of Punjab? I mean, just before that, there was the All Pakistan protest strike on December the 31st in support of the blasphemy laws. Then, of course, after the murder, lawyers showering petals on the assassin. And then those who mourned for Taseer were threatened and all kinds of, how do you find the situation now? Do you think that the minority communities are safe enough?
No, I think the situation is on the contrary. They are vulnerable, and not only the religious minorities, but even Muslims who call for an exchange in the law. And it's not just the blasphemy laws. They would like the direction of the society to be changed from intolerant to tolerant Pakistan, from undemocratic to democratic Pakistan. So all those Muslims, they also happen to be vulnerable. They are also being targeted by the hate mongers. So the situation right now is not easy one. There is quite a lot of threat in the air, fear among the people. This is why Pope's speech, Pope's comment, it can also well serve the purpose of becoming voice of the voiceless.
How would you describe Punjab governor who has been murdered, Salman Taseer? What type of a man was he? He was definitely a leading moderate voice in the country.
Indeed, he hailed from a very well-educated family, and his father was an educationist and a scholar. His mother also was a very learned person. So Mr. Salman Taseer, as a political activist, as well as his stint in business and now as a governor, he was a very courageous person. He did not have any criminal record. That is very, very important. And that the commitment that he showed was always characteristic of his own personal profile.
Do you think there are enough moderate voices still in Pakistan who can take up what Tasir has left behind?
I believe it is very much true. There are voices, but they are being threatened, and those voices are being silenced in brutal manner by violence and by threats. But still, I would say the civil society of Pakistan, the intellectuals, academia, intelligentsia, they will not surrender. They will continue to raise their voice for human rights and human dignity.
Do you think that secularism in Pakistan is definitely dying and mainstream extremism is there to rule for some time now?
In fact, we never had any secular polity. We've always had a religious or theocratic order. What is interesting is that we have always had a secular element in the society, very strong, which was, you know, somehow pro-democracy and was fighting for the rights. And again, in this struggle, the center of this struggle is with the people who have secularism as their main aspiration.
Why has this change taken place all of a sudden? I mean, in the last 15-20 years, there has been a tremendous sort of increase in extremism, which in Pakistan was not there before.
Of course, there are different factors, internal, external, and there has been an official patronage available to religious parties and madrasas. And moreover, Pakistan's law, constitution, and policies, they are styled to favor one religious community. And from them, of course, there is a class, really, there is a clerical class, which gets benefits and privileges. And who would meddle in politics, and sometimes even using unfair means. So all that connection of Afghanistan jihad and Kashmir trouble and the birth of Pakistan, all those factors are behind this emerging scene. The state must understand, the society must understand that those voices which were calling to secularize Pakistan's polity, had been actually trying to save Pakistan from a lot of trouble.
As a Christian and as a Catholic and as the head of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Pakistani Bishops Conference, what are your hopes? Do you think that Pakistan, there will be a good time for Pakistan coming in somewhere in the future?
It has been always possible. There has been always a time where Pakistan could make a comeback and turn itself into a viable democracy and prosperous country. I think this is still possible. We only have to, first of all, shun our ideals as a military state, as a security state. We have to make peace with the neighboring countries, and the neighboring countries also have to understand Pakistan's problems. We have to mend our economies, stop corruption, and I think stop the consumerist way of life, and that will help Pakistan to continue its journey towards democracy and equality of rights.
Peter Jacob is the Executive Secretary of the National Commission for Justice and Peace of the Pakistani Bishops Conference. He was speaking there to Robin Gomez. And as the Pope delivered his State of the World address to diplomats in the Vatican focusing on religious freedom, the same issue has been under the spotlight at an international meeting of Catholic Church leaders in the Holy Land. Philippa Hitchin is in Jerusalem following the annual coordination meeting of bishops from Europe and North America in support of Christians in the Holy Land.
He In his opening address to the visiting bishops, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal, spelt out the twin threats to the freedom of the Christian community here. Muslim extremists, he said, with attacks against our churches and faithful, and right-wing Israeli policies, which he said are invading more and more Jerusalem, trying to transform it into an exclusively Hebrew-Jewish city. While Christians live and work peacefully alongside the vast majority of moderate Muslims throughout the West Bank, the threats of extremist groups in Gaza, as well as the recent massacres of churchgoers in Egypt and Iraq, have increased tensions here in recent weeks. And as the meeting began on Sunday, Israeli bulldozers were demolishing a historic hotel in Arab East Jerusalem to build more Jewish settler homes, a move which has sparked strong criticism from the US and European leaders. Quoting from what he called the prophetic words of the recent Middle East Synod propositions, Patriarch Twal said persecution of believers must raise awareness of Christians worldwide of the need for greater solidarity, in particular a commitment to support and insist on international law and respect for the rights of all peoples. For 10 years, that's exactly what this international group of Catholic bishops has tried to provide, witnessing to abuses firsthand and meeting with Palestinian and Israeli officials both here and in their home countries. Yet there's also a growing awareness that the churches in the Holy Land must learn to help themselves and work more effectively for justice and peace without waiting for miraculous solutions to be imposed from the outside. As the Patriarch told the visiting bishops, people here have lost hope in the endless speeches and visits by political or religious personalities and are demanding the local churches be more involved in working for concrete progress on the ground. The Kairos document, a theological statement drawn up by a broad group of lay Palestinian Christians calling for non-violent resistance to the Israeli occupation, is a clear attempt to respond to that call. The second striking realization on the part of most Christian churches here is that they will be unable to make progress unless they work harder at overcoming divisions and learn to cooperate much closer together. Though this idea began to take shape over 2 decades ago during the first Intifada, there now seems to be a greater urgency to the ecumenical agenda. Also addressing the opening session of the coordination meeting was the new president of the Lutheran World Federation, Bishop Munib Younan of Jordan and the Holy Land, who met recently with Pope Benedict in the Vatican. He called on church leaders in the region to be more prophetic and more ecumenical, saying, "Sometimes we are more concerned about the holy places than about the holy people here." His address was followed by a visit to the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem, Theophilus III, for an exchange of Christmas greetings by leaders of all 13 Christian churches represented here. Such gatherings now occur regularly each Christmas and Easter, and there's clearly a growing trust and friendship between these leaders, clad in their distinctive flowing robes and elaborately embroidered headgear. Certainly the historic divisions between the denominations remain not far below the surface, but the common goal of defending real religious freedom for Christians is now an important catalyst for ecumenical progress. In Jerusalem, with the Holy Land Coordination, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.